Hey, welcome back to Club 30, everyone. I'm your host, Henrik Lundqvist. Jay Lydell to my left. How we doing?
Great. I'm excited for today.
Excited for today. Our guest today, I have to be honest, I don't know ton about ballet, but she is the GOAT of ballet.
Whether it's my work with Prince or, you know, just different Taylor Swift and Drake and, you know, kind of putting ballet out there in a way where I'm like, we can introduce people to it in a way that is palatable for them or something that they're interested in and say like, oh, that's interesting. It's maybe not what I thought it was. Right. So I've seen a big shift in the audience, like in performances of mine where it's like a sold out show and it's like full of black people. Like I've never seen that at the Metropolitan Opera House. You know?
I know more about Misty than I do about ballet, only because of her tremendous career and how she's been able to transcend performing art that's quite niche and traditional. I think the first time I saw her was in that Under Armour commercial, and I was just blown away by the athleticism. I'm excited to learn a lot more about what makes her, you know, this prodigy and greatest of all time.
Yeah, and obviously ballet, it's kind of a combination of art and sport.
Yeah.
You can't do ballet if you're not in great shape. I mean, what you do, it's so hard on your body, right? But at the same time, it's an art form. So you need your, I think your mind probably needs to be in a certain place.
It's, I think if you're considered a prodigy, you have to be, have elements of that artistic ability and the athletic. Maybe it's a little bit like figure skating in the sense that it's, you're not competing against another team, but you're competing against this artistic and technical level of perfection. You're always trying to reach that in a performance.
I'm curious to hear about how hard they train.
Yeah.
I mean, having two girls now in gymnastics, you know, sport also requires discipline and training and structure.
Yeah.
I really want to know, you know, how many hours do they spend training or preparing for a show?
I'm imagining that whatever number we're thinking is low. Should we bring Misty in?
We should.
Okay. Without further ado, here's Misty Copeland.
She's the most iconic ballerina of her generation. A trailblazer on stage, a best-selling author, an entrepreneur, and a philanthropist. Welcome to Club 30, principal dancer for the American Ballet Theater, Misty Copeland.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me. So good to have you here, Misty. And first question that I want to know, what do you remember feeling first time you tried ballet?
Oh, let's see. The very, very first time was on a basketball court at the Boys and Girls Club in Los Angeles, where I grew up. And I guess the first time it was like, what am I doing? Like, what is this? It was so foreign. I was 13 years old, so it was late to be introduced to the art form. I mean, in terms of wanting to go professional. And so I think it just felt really like outside of my element, outside of my comfort zone. The music, I'd never heard classical music before. So it was all just so new. And so it wasn't something that I thought I would continue doing. I was literally forced into continuing taking this class because the teacher saw so much talent in me.
Interesting.
And immediately called me a prodigy. I didn't understand what that word meant, but I would say maybe a couple of weeks later, I would consider that really my first class. Once I was in a ballet studio, I had the proper attire on. I was in a leotard and tights. I had ballet slippers. There were mirrors and bars on the wall. And that was when I was like, okay, everything clicked. I saw my reflection. I felt like strong and beautiful, and like I had a voice and like agency over myself for the first time ever in my life. And I'm one of six children, so I have to share everything. So this was like the first time it was like, this is mine. This is something that's just for me, where kind of all the noise and all the chaos went away and I could just like be me.
Wow. So did you feel, it sounds like pretty fast, you felt like, I'm good at this.
I was being told I was good at it. That wasn't something I was really like thinking about or focused on. It was like, it was an escape from my life outside of ballet, which was really chaotic and not stable. And we often didn't have a place to sleep or food on the table. So this was like the most serene space where I could just, I mean, you're so vulnerable. You're literally practically naked in these environments. And so I felt this, like I was in this little cocoon where I could just be creative and express myself. And there was something so comforting about that, that allowed me to like really find my voice. So I think that, you know, it was the first time I was being challenged in a way that I was interested in. And so that to me was interesting, to come back every day and like want to learn something new and retain the information I was taking in. That to me was like so incredible. And I like wanted to continue to challenge myself, like how far can I go in a year? Like how much can I learn? And it just kind of like just kept going like at rapid speed.
So how much time did you spend at that point dancing? Like between 13 and 15, like how many hours did you spend?
I was probably dancing like 6 hours a day.
A day?
Wow. 6 days a week.
No way.
Yeah. So I was in public school when I initially started at 13. And then my teacher who discovered me invited me to live with her and her family.
Yeah.
So with her three-year-old son and her husband, so that I could do independent study. So I was doing like homeschooling so that I could really get the training and focus on what I needed to do. So that was, my days were spent dancing and catching up on all the training. So by the time I was, I guess I'd been dancing for about a year and a half, I won my first like big ballet competition. And that was the first time I was really kind of introduced to the ballet scene. So the people that were judging the competition were, you know, the artistic director of the Joffrey Ballet in Chicago and someone from American Ballet Theater, someone from the San Francisco Ballet. And that was kind of the start of my career.
That kind of training volume at that age is wild.
Yeah.
Like no other youth sport.
At your age, what would that type of training look like at that age for you?
For hockey, I don't think it's hard to spend that many hours on the ice. Mm-hmm. It's obviously as a team, you're out there for an hour, 2 hours, but then you maybe spend an hour in the gym.
Mm-hmm.
6 hours, that's a lot. But I want to know, like, at what point did you start setting goals for yourself? For me, as a kid, I grew up at 5, 6 years old. I knew I wanted to play hockey. That was my dream. That was my goal. But for you, you start at 13, which, by the way, that's late for any sport. So when did you start setting goals and start dreaming about maybe a potential role or a place to go as a dancer?
It was pretty immediate. I mean, also, again, because I was invited to live with my teacher with the intentions of going professional. Like that was our goal. That's why I moved in with her and we were very serious about it. So I would say pretty immediately, American Ballet Theater was my goal. Like that was the company I wanted to dance for. I saw my first ballet live performance. I think I was like 14 or 15 and it was American Ballet Theater. And I was like, this is it. There's no other company for me. Like I was taken into San Francisco Ballet School on full scholarship, but I knew that wasn't the company I wanted to dance for. I was like, sure, I'll go here and get some training and like a different, you know, perspective on things and be around other dancers that are at a high level and challenge myself. But ABT was always the goal. So by the time I was, I guess, 16 years old, I was already being offered contracts to join like the junior company of American Ballet Theater here in New York City.
After 3 years.
And that's crazy.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And this may like belie our kind of ignorance, but I would describe what you do as sport, but it's obviously performing arts. So do you consider, like most of America, do you consider yourself an athlete that's in the performing arts?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
It is equally as athletic as any professional like sport. And then you add on the element of being an actor, an actress. I mean, we use the technique of ballet as a tool to tell a story.
Right.
So it's not just a physical feat and we have to make it look effortless, which takes even more effort. It's not like you're in the gym and you're making whatever face you want and you're grunting. It's like you have to look elegant and you literally have to act and tell a story. So to me, it's not a sport because we're not competing, but it is extremely athletic. And, you know, we have a lot of the same injuries as professional athletes. I remember my first really serious injury. I had 6 stress fractures in my tibia and I had to have a plate inserted into my tibia. And the doctor, and he treats a lot of professional football and basketball players. And he was like, I don't understand how this happened. Like, did someone like tackle you? And I was like, no, it's like repetitive jumping, maybe not always being on the right surfaces, which is so hard as a professional dancer, because you'll get gigs and things and they don't have the proper flooring and things like that. And as dancers, it's like, you don't get paid enough. And you often take opportunities that you shouldn't be taking because it's not the right setup for you, but you do it. And so that's kind of like how dancers end up with the injuries that they get. It's like just not the proper rest, which is equally as important as the training that you're putting in. And so, yes, it's very physical.
Wow. Did you have any injuries growing up? Like when you're in your teams?
I was pretty lucky as a kid. But I definitely had similar things, stress fractures, because my skates were so sharp. So the stress on my feet was pretty high at times, inside knees. I had some issues with that. But looking, you know, ballet dancer, the pressure you put on your ankles, how do you prevent it? Like, did you put your feet in ice bath after every training session or performance? Or what do you do to not have issues?
Right. Rest is so important. So your body has time to heal. Yes. Icing, not so much my feet. Like that's something that you get used to. It's like you build up the strength and the calluses and all of those things. Like when I was younger, when I was in my teens and I was training and, you know, I would have insane blisters and you're like, how am I going to put this tight little shoe on again and stand on my toes for hours at a time? Yeah. But yeah, it's probably similar things to any professional athlete, you know, game ready machines and like, you know, compression and all of those things. So yeah. Similar to any athlete.
Does the ABT, which is the kind of the most prestigious company in the world, does it have that high tech support infrastructure behind it like the Rangers might?
No, not at all. No. Again, it's just like, you know, every ballet company is different and they have different different sources of support. You know, we don't have government funding, which most companies at this level in other countries have that. And so they have a very different you know, a structure that's built in. And so throughout all of my career, I've really kind of gone on my own and looked for PT and just different professionals that could, which is hard. I mean, you're paying out of pocket at that point, but it's something that I've always valued and understood that I needed to have the career that I have and to do it for as long as I have.
So at 18, you moved to New York.
Yeah. 17, turning 18.
Turning 18 to join American Ballet Theater. Mm-hmm. How was that experience?
So I was in New York the summer before. That was my very first time in New York. And it was such a shock, you know, coming from Los Angeles, a small town on the beach in Los Angeles. And I was just, it was shocking first to see how dirty it was. I think I was like, why is all the trash on the street? And it was in the summer. And so I was just like, I don't understand what's happening. Like just bags of trash. It's like, I don't understand. But in terms of just like experiencing like other art forms and being exposed to like so many different cultures and different people was like incredible. Mm. And then at 17, I moved here permanently. And I think that was when it all kind of hit me, what it is to be a Black woman in this field. Mm-hmm. I don't think it was something I really understood. Coming from this kind of insulated studio where the focus was on my training. It wasn't about the color of my skin. I was really shielded from a lot of the stuff that was happening in terms of my race in my school, where I was the only Black girl in my school. But I moved to this company and there's like 90 dancers. I'm one of 90 and I'm the only Black woman. And I'm expecting like I'm in this like cultural mecca, like in New York City, and I'm spending 8 hours a day in a building only seeing white people. And it was shocking. And I think that was when I started to like reassess my purpose and like what I could do in the field that was beyond just being the best dancer I could be. That it became about having a different purpose.
Yeah.
So you felt, I mean, this is, correct me if I'm wrong, in 07, you became the second Black female soloist at ABT. Mm-hmm. So obviously it's a dream for you to join, but also did you feel somewhat responsibility to, mm-hmm. you know, try to open that door.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think initially I didn't really understand what it meant. But the longer I was in the company, of course, with the promotion to soloist, and just kind of reflecting and seeing that I couldn't open up a history book and learn about Black dancers in ballet. Yeah. Like, our history is just not documented. I had no idea there was another Black woman who had been in the company, let alone been promoted to soloist. Like, it wasn't a documented history that I knew, and I knew the ABT history. Like, I was obsessed with this company. Mm-hmm. I was going to learn everything about all the dancers, and I had no idea there was a Black woman. So then it became this responsibility. All of the books that I've written, 9 books now, and they all are, you know, I'm trying to find ways to document our history, whether it's, you know, past dancers, people that are dancing now, people that are up and coming, to give people education about this art form. It's not about knocking what the past has been. This is a European art form that was developed in Europe, where yeah. there weren't people who looked like me.
Right.
Well, not a lot, you know, and that we're introduced to this art form. So it's like, we need to learn what the past was. And now that this is an art form that is very relevant in America, how can we make it reflective right. of our communities today? Yeah.
Have your efforts and those of any others turned the light bulb on for inclusion for people of color in ballet?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a long history that, like, it's been like slowly chipping away and like kind of waking yeah. people up to it. I think about Arthur Mitchell, who was the founder of, artistic director and founder of the Dance Theater of Harlem. And he was the first Black principal dancer at the New York City Ballet in like the 60s. I mean, just having a stage full of Black dancers in the 70s with afros and wearing like brown tights and brown shoes was huge. And just like giving an opportunity for the Black brown community to be a part of ballet. This is a space where you can all be accepted and dance, made such a huge impact on the ballet world. And then there's been so many dancers throughout history that have like made their small contributions. And I feel like my responsibility is to shine a light on those contributions. Mm-hmm. I would say that I've seen a change in the audiences and the people interested in ballet since I've kind of been on the scene and have put myself out there in a world that may not be acceptable to all the, you know, balletomanes, and like, whether it's my work with Prince or, you know, just different Taylor Swift and Drake, and, you know, kind of putting ballet out there in a way where I'm like, we can introduce people to it in a way that is palatable for them or something that they're interested in
right.
and say like, oh, that's interesting. It's maybe not what I thought it was.
Right.
So I've seen a big shift in the audience, mm-hmm. like in performances of mine where it's like a sold out show and it's like full of Black people. Like, we've never seen that at the Metropolitan Opera House, you know? I mean, now we see it because we're there doing Black operas and things like that. But I would say the most change I've seen was during the pandemic.
Yeah.
You are such a big inspiration to so many people, but who is your inspiration?
Janet Collins, who was the first Black ballerina to dance at the Metropolitan Opera, and Raven Wilkinson. I wrote my recent book about her.
Cool.
Who was the first Black woman to dance in like a major ballet company in America in the 1950s with a company that came from Europe called the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo. And she was promoted to soloist, which was unheard of at that time for a Black woman. And she ended up living a block away from me. She was my neighbor. And I found out that she had been coming to all my performances, and she really gave me this, like a, it was like a rebirth. Mm-hmm. It was like, you know, at a time when I had been in the company for like, I don't know, 12 years. And it just felt like maybe this is it. This is like where I'm going to be. And I have to accept that. And like meeting her and hearing her story and all that she had been through, experiencing incredible racism that I could never even comprehend, touring through the South and dealing with the KKK threatening her life because she was on stage with white dancers. And she still had so much joy and passion for this art form.
Right.
And it just made me feel like I have so much more to do. Like, I have so much more work to do. I can't follow anyone else's journey or path. Like, I have to do things my way. It doesn't matter how long it takes me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep working.
Yeah. It's amazing. You know, like every dancer or athlete or performer who walks through the door and starts work, you know, like has they go from zero to excellent. But mm-hmm. I think the challenge that you're describing is that before you arrive at work, it's a whole lot different mm-hmm. to be a white dancer than a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's incredible to balance that. And I'm thinking about all these incredible women who have forced visibility mm-hmm. and develop this whole new audience mm-hmm. of kids who can be like, I want to be Misty, or I want to be Simone. It's really exciting. I know you just had your first kid pretty recently, right? How does that impact your purpose and your responsibility to Hank's question earlier?
Yeah, it's, I feel like I've spent, of course, you know, I've mentored young kids my whole career. And so that's always something at the front of my mind that I want to set a good example, that they're looking at me, and to just make myself as available and accessible as possible, whether it's just like going to public schools and talking to the kids and like, I'm real. I'm not just someone you see on a stage or on a poster. Mm-hmm. But having my son now, it's like all of this investment I've spent my whole career, which I know you know about, like putting into yourself. It's an amazing feeling to feel like I'm investing that in someone else now. That's like really fulfilling in a way that I never imagined it would be.
That's awesome. You mentioned he was a ballet fan.
It's wild because he hasn't, I'm not one of those ballet moms that's like shoving ballet down his throat from the moment he comes out. He just kind of stumbled into it. I mean, he's a very athletic boy. I mean, he came out with like quads and calves. It's wild. I'm like, what is happening? Like, who is this little guy? But yeah, he's a natural mover. He loves music and he loves ballet. He watches like full-length ballets. Like that's what he wants to watch. He asks to watch it. He's never seen me dance. He doesn't really understand that I'm a ballerina. So that's going to be interesting when he can understand
that. Wow. Isn't that fascinating?
Yeah. I mean, to become as good as you are, you're one of a kind, but what are the most important qualities that you have in your opinion that helped you reach this level?
That's such a great question. I don't feel like I'm often asked that. I would say that in the beginning, at least, what made me stand out and what made me progress so quickly, I was a visual learner. And I don't think I was aware of that. Like when I was in my public school, I got by, like I did well. And I think that was because I'm a Virgo and I was like afraid of coming home with bad grades. And my mom was like, what is happening? Yeah. And so it was just like, I was working and working and working, and like I would memorize things on a page, but like I was not absorbing anything and not really learning. And I didn't realize that that was something that would help me, at least in the beginning of learning ballet, I could see my teacher do something and mimic them immediately and be able to just kind of go visually by what I was seeing. And I had a good ear for music and kind of connecting that to my body. I was naturally really strong. Both of my parents are like athletes. And so I think I had naturally just had a strong build and body. I was flexible. But I think a lot of it, you know, beyond the physical was my understanding of it, my ability to retain the information I was getting, and then being able to express artistically on stage. So there's so many qualities that you need to have. It's like your body type, your flexibility, your strength, your musicality, and then how you perform. Like there are so many things involved. But I feel like as an adult and as a professional, it's definitely been like my artistic ability, I think, that have set me apart from other dancers more so than any like technical abilities. I think like once you get to a certain point, like everyone's pretty even, you know, like you're all great and you get to this place and you can, you know, pretty much do the same things physically. But then it's like, what do you do beyond that? How do you bring people in? How do you tell a story and make them really interested?
I'm curious to hear, can you take us through like a week? Just in terms of training and stretching. And like, I have two young girls, they're into gymnastics.
Oh, wow.
So obviously it's a lot of discipline and structure and training and competitions. But I would love to hear, like, how did a week look like?
Okay, so there's two seasons. There's the training season and then there's the performance or touring season. Well, there's three, I guess. There's the training, then there's if we have like a season, say here in New York City, we'll have our spring summer season at the Metropolitan Opera House that will be for 8 weeks. And then we'll have a touring season where we'll be on and off the road for like 2 weeks at a time in different countries, just traveling. So I'll say like a performance here in New York City, a week. So you'd be at the theater probably by 10 a.m. which seems like a late start, but we have a long, long days. So we start around 10 a.m., like getting to the theater so that we can get prepared and, you know, dressed and get to the studio. And then 10:30 is ballet class. So it's an hour and a half ballet class we take every single day without miss. Like you don't, like that's how you maintain your technique. It's like keeping an instrument fine tuned. It's the same ballet class you've pretty much been taking since I was 13. It's the same format. There's nothing that's really more difficult. It's just, this is what you do to start your day. We'll get a 15-minute break, water, bathroom, and then like we kind of just go. So we'll rehearse from like 12 until maybe 5:30. And this is on a performance day. And so the performance starts at like 7:30. So we rehearse all day. So we may be doing a spacing of the ballet we're going to do in the evening. And then we'll go into full hair and makeup and we'll do a full tech rehearsal. And then you may come out of your hair and makeup and everything and then go into a rehearsal for a ballet you're doing the following week. Whoa. So you're already preparing for what's to come. So we switch ballets every single week. And then you go on stage and you'll perform like a 3-hour ballet that night. It's really grueling. So that's like five days out of the week. And within that, you may find an hour that you slip away and go to PT or go take a Pilates class or go to the gym and do some cardio or, you know, gyrotonics. So it's very, very intense.
It's incredible. Yeah. What a commitment. I mean, and we talk about it here. We have so many interesting guests come in here. And a lot of times we do talk about passion for what you do. I mean, to do what you do at that level, you have to have so much passion for it.
You absolutely have to, because like I said, you know, people don't go into this field for the money. They don't go into it to become famous. Like that's not what happens in our field. I know that I've had like an exceptional career and done things outside of the box, but that's not why you join this field. And you have to want to put the work in, enjoy the work, enjoy the process and performing.
That kind of unfair advantage that you mentioned, you had the artistic ability. Is that kind of like a flow state?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
When you're in it, you're not. And how do you develop that? Like, what are the tools that behind that getting and being able to access that flow?
You know, it's something I feel like I innately have, but I've learned more as I've gotten older, like how to hone in and like really focus. As a young person, like I was saying earlier, it really was such a safe zone for me. Mm. Being in a studio, a place that was like quiet and serene, I could just kind of relax and like really open up. And then getting onto the stage, it was like I was in this protective bubble. And my family at first, they were like, I was so introverted. I didn't speak. I was very shy. I was not a performer. And so they didn't understand. They were like, do you realize you have to go on stage and you have to perform in front of people? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. And there was just something about being up there with that. You can't see the audience. It's just black. And there's just the music and me, and I have full control. There's no ballet teacher. There's no coach, nothing. I'm like, I'm in charge and I can express myself the way I'm comfortable, which is without words. It was like all of the chaos, abuse, all the things I'd experienced. It was like, this was the most perfect escape for me. And then as an adult, like it still worked that way where it was like a release from everything in my life. But I loved the challenge. Like all the hours I'm putting in my training and the rehearsals, like it's like, this is all going towards what's going to happen on stage. So the more prepared I am, the more hours I put in, the more I can let go, the more I can be so present and focused mentally and forget about the physical and the technical things because they're going to happen because my body's muscle memory is going to take over.
Right.
And there was something really amazing about that. And also the aspect of like live performance that you don't have control over, but I was like, there's something really exciting about that. Where like anything could go wrong. Mm-hmm. Someone can fall, forget the steps, the lighting is wrong, the conductor is going too fast and is not looking at you and you have to adjust to all of these elements. And there's something that I found so amazing to have those challenges.
Is that when you felt the absolute best being on stage performing in front of people?
Yeah. And I think also just, you know, I've performed in so many different elements and venues. And again, it's just like the challenge of getting different types of audiences to stay engaged, you have to be able to adjust in the moment. I mean, you perform in different countries and each audience and culture is so different. And it's like, how do I keep them engaged and interested? And you have to be able to adjust and adapt.
Do you have a different game plan depending on where in the world you are?
Yeah. I think also with different partners as well.
Yeah.
There's some that like some partners or some audiences that need you to give more and need you to kind of be over the top. And then others that you have to kind of balance out their energy and pull back. So it's really cool.
Is there one performance that when you think back of all the places you've been, all the performances you've done, is there one performance that stands out to you personally that means a lot to you?
Yeah, well, there are so many that do. I would say that the very first time I performed the role of the Firebird at Lincoln Center at the Metropolitan Opera House, I was still a soloist at the time, so I hadn't been promoted to principal dancer, but this was the first principal role I was dancing, like in a full classical ballet. And I was the first Black woman to perform this role in my company. And me and my manager had put in so much work. Like, we were like, this is such an important moment. And it's important that the Black community knows about this performance and feels like they can come to this space and see themselves represented on the stage. So we did so much work in terms of just like interviews and going into spaces and talking to the kids and saying like, come to this show. And so to step out onto the stage, and I was dealing with that injury at the time, I hadn't realized it was as bad as it was, the stress fractures. And to walk out onto the stage, and I couldn't even hear the music because they were cheering so loud. So I was like, I'm just going to dance and see where I fall, where I end up in the music. But to know that it was like a packed house that for the very first time that was full of young people and diverse people, and to know that the community turned up like that for the first time was like so memorable. Not because of what I did on the stage, because I don't think it was great that night, but it wasn't about that. You know, it was about people feeling like they could be in that space and that they were seen.
You touched a couple of times on the artsy side for you. You released a film, Flower, like telling stories through film. Is that something that you love doing?
This is not something I ever imagined I would do, but everything I do outside of, you know, performing with American Ballet Theatre, performing classical works on stage, they're all connected to the same mission. It's how do we make this art form more accessible? How do we make it more relatable? How do we tell stories about communities today, like things that we're going through in society, and making this art form more diverse? And so with this film, what I feel that we've done. To me, it's a modern ballet. It's where I think ballet should be headed. So it's a short film. There's no dialogue. It's all told through movement, but it's not a musical. It's not like a dance film because there's movement that happens throughout where it's very human. So it's as if we're sitting here having conversation without actually speaking, or I'm doing very mundane things. I'm in the kitchen and I'm cooking, but it's all through action. But it's telling a story about the community of Oakland, California, and what that community was going through 3 years ago when we made the film.
Yeah.
Gentrification and the housing crisis and homelessness, and doing all of this through art and through dance. And so I star in it and I produced it. And we really just highlighted the community of Oakland, California. Artists from the community, it's like 99% of people on the film that made it and are in it are from the community. So we wanted to let them tell their story. But incredible. I feel like this is what art should be. It should be able to evolve. It should be able to grow. And it should be able to represent many people.
Yeah, for sure. You guys have one interesting thing in common, which is I believe that you each have documentaries that premiered at Tribeca.
Uh-huh.
Is that right?
Yes.
Let's talk.
When was this?
Mine premiered in June.
Amazing.
It was a great experience. And yeah. I live in Tribeca now. So when I started the project, I talked to the producer about when we finished this film, it would be very cool to premiere at Tribeca. I've lived there now for 8 years. I've been in New York City for 18 years, but in Tribeca for about 8 years. So I had a great experience.
That's so cool.
And how about yourself? How was it?
Yeah. So my documentary, Ballerina's Tale, it premiered, I think it was 2015, I could be wrong. And it was like an incredible experience. I mean, to be a part of a festival, first of all, that, you know, that has so much history
right.
with so many iconic films that have come through there was like unbelievable. But no, it was an incredible experience to bring ballet to that audience and that space and to share my story.
I watched it before you came in today and she narrates it, which is really, really powerful. Mm. My daughter's Thank only you. 5 months, but when she's old enough, I'm really pumped because her room is all ballerinas.
Oh, yeah. I love it.
So yeah, it's really, really powerful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I loved it.
Thank you.
I mean, you have so many things going on. And again, the importance of your role, opening doors and opening the eyes to so many people, you know, want to become a ballet dancer. Mm-hmm. And of all the different things you're doing, what are you most excited about right now?
That is so hard. It's like choosing your favorite child.
Well, sometimes you have to, right? Maybe
Love
not.
It. Okay, can I do like two?
You can get three things.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay,
I
mean, I'll just do two.
Two.
Because they're very different. Okay. I'm so excited about this athletic wear line, Greatness Wins, with Derek Jeter. And to be two athletes that are invested in the company that helped found the company, I think that that's setting a new standard, that we don't always have to have an endorsement deal and be the face of a product, but that we can create and we can really be at the core of building what it is. And so I'm really proud that, you know, we just, Derek launched the men's line last year and I just launched the women's line a couple of months ago. So it's a new space for me, but to use our experiences of what, you know, wearing this gear and working out in it and kind of coming with a different lens than I think a lot of other athletic wear brands. But then also my foundation, which is also fairly new. Our first program just celebrated our 1 year anniversary, and it's a free ballet class. I've created the curriculum myself with incredible partners, but it's giving free ballet classes. Right now we're in communities in the Bronx and in Harlem at an after school community centers. But to be able to create, you know, that you're not just taking this old art form and bringing it into these Black and Brown communities and saying, here, like, connect to
this.
Yeah. You know, but trying to make it something that they can relate to. There's live music in every class, and it's not, I actually think there's maybe like one piano player that plays, but we have like African drums and guitar and bass. So it's like a mix of music and experience. And then just changing up the way they learn what it is, you know, the technique, and that they're learning about Black and Brown ballet history, because that's not something they can easily get access to. So that from the beginning, they're learning about different dancers who look like them. Mm-hmm. And it's really exciting. I think most of all, to see the boys that are interested in coming in, because it doesn't look like, I think, what they think ballet is.
Right.
And that they even have teachers that look like them. We have a lot of male teachers as well. So that to me is super exciting.
Awesome.
Wow.
And I love to ask our guests that come here to Club 30 how they feel about pressure. And I'm now away from the game and I kind of miss the pressure.
Yeah.
And being in your position, being one of the best ballet dancers, how do you feel about pressure? And also I want to know how much pressure is it to be in that position?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's different types of pressures. And so I think that, you know, I've been in positions where I think there can be like really unhealthy pressure, and it's how you handle it, how you deal with it. I remember specifically, it was the year that I ended up getting promoted to principal dancer. And it's not common that a dancer who's, you know, I was old to be promoted to principal. I was 32 at the time. That's like ancient. If you're not a principal dancer by then, like, you're thinking about retirement by the time you're 30. If you're a soloist, it's so grueling on the body. Hmm. And so at 32, you know, and I was already so visible. So the season that I was getting to perform all these principal roles, it's kind of like a test. Like, can she handle it? Can she do this? Can she really carry this company? And the New York Times and every major like publication was writing articles, and the pressure of like, if she fails in this technical, you know, move, will she be promoted? And it was like the pressure of that to me was like so unhealthy and so unnatural, like that no dancer experiences that when they're approaching these roles for the first time. There's no New York Times coming to review it. Like, you know what I mean? You're under the radar, you're kind of learning and growing and in an organic way. And I feel like I didn't have that opportunity. But handling that pressure, it was like having an amazing support system, which I've always had, like having mentors in my corner that were just like, stay focused, like that noise doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But then there's like the healthy pressure that I, like you're saying, like it's a nice feeling because you like, it fuels you in a lot of ways. Yeah, it allows you to kind of feel like this isn't any ordinary day. It's not like just being in the studio and rehearsing. It's like a different type of expectation that I think, of course, from, you know, the people around you, but also from yourself. And so I haven't been on a stage performing in like 3 years. And so I definitely miss some of that healthy pressure.
Are you coming back?
I will dance at some point again, but I have so many things I want to do. And I've danced professionally for 23 years at American Ballet Theatre, and I've done a lot, and I haven't had a lot of time to focus on growing these other endeavors that I think are equally as important as the work I do on stage, whether it's the foundation or the production company or babies, you know, and as a woman and as an athlete, it's very difficult to really have that window of time to do these types of things. So it's like, I want to take advantage and just like really kind of get a hold of this before I go back to the stage.
So even if you maybe not perform in front of an audience, do you think you'll always be part of the ballet world?
Absolutely. This is everything that I do, and it means so much to me. And I know the value and importance of art, of the arts and of arts education, and that's work I will always be doing.
Yeah. Are there any young up-and-coming Black ballet dancers that we should know about?
There's some that are like so young that like, I don't think I even want to say their names because they're probably you shouldn't do that. There are so many amazing young dancers that are like out there that I'm so excited about. But there are dancers at American Ballet Theatre. I mean, there's Calvin Royale III. He's a male dancer, Black principal dancer. He's only the second ever male principal dancer in the company's history. He's incredible. Erica Lull, who's in the company. There's like a handful of amazing dancers out there that in the company of Black dancers that I can't wait to see what happens for them.
Let's say me and Jay would want to walk in for a ballet practice. How would that practice look like? Hour one. Okay. We're walking to the gym now. Like, what do we do? Like, how do
you
start?
What would you do?
Yeah.
Really with like the basics, like you would start probably facing the bars. Like we wouldn't yet give you the freedom to hold on with one hand so that you could really work on your form and get a good foundation.
Form is everything.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. So that you're building strength with the correct form. And I think sometimes if you start to, you know, moving too soon with one hand on the bar, you might hurt something.
Sure. Definitely would hurt something. Yeah.
But
I'd love to take you up on that challenge.
Yeah, I mean, that would be interesting.
I don't know if your production company is short on ideas, but I would watch that.
Well, actually, I just spent some time on the ice. I haven't been skating since I retired, 2.5 years.
Yeah.
I didn't skate at all. And I put the pads back on recently, and it was good the first day or two, and then day three I was so sore.
Right. You can't function, right?
Obviously, I think I would have done a little bit better during my career to try ballet. Today, it's just everything is just tight.
Because as goalie, they're pretty much the most flexible player in major team sports.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, you would think, but I was never really that flexible.
Yeah.
I have a twin brother. He's exactly the same, like short muscles and not very flexible. But yeah, maybe we should try it one day, Jay.
Definitely.
It's never too late.
I feel bad now that I've never seen you perform live in person. But so obviously there's other ways that we can continue. But if you ever do make a comeback, Hank and I will be in the audience.
I would love to.
Yeah, I would love to
you.
Be there.
Yeah.
Thank you.
This has been really, really inspiring.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks for coming by and joining us. And
how do we support or our Club 30 listeners? How do we support the foundation? Do we have events in New York that are accessible?
No, we haven't started the galas or any of that yet, but there are opportunities to learn more it's the Misty Copeland Foundation. So you can go online, mistycopelandfoundation.org.
Great.
We also have a presence on social media, on Instagram, where you can learn more about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, great. So great.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
It was great to meet you.
Such an honor.
Yeah. No, it was our honor is all ours. This has been amazing. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Misty Copeland for swinging by our studio here, Club 30. First off,
What are your initial reactions?
I think it's too late for me to start ballet. That's my first reaction. But you never know. She did say it's never too late.
True. And she was a late bloomer. She started at 13.
Yeah, that blew my mind, to be honest.
Yeah.
13 years old. And 3 years later, they were already offering her positions at places that, you know, require so much skill. The commitment to what they do blew me away as well. 6 hours a day.
Yeah. When we came into this show, we didn't really know what that mix was going to be like. What's amazing is that you have to be the best. You have to have this artistic flow, this technical ability that's, you know, thousands and thousands of reps. And then you have to bring it all together with this mental connection that keeps it all together. It's wild.
It was extremely impressive.
Yeah. I wish my daughter was a bit older to appreciate this, because that was just so inspiring. And I know we have the privilege to have a lot of amazing guests on here. And maybe it was because we didn't know a lot about ballet going in. It kind of blew my mind, you know? It was great.
6 hours a day as a 13-year-old. But I just love meeting people with that type of commitment and passion for something.
Energy.
And obviously, to become that good.
Right.
Yeah. There's no shortcuts, obviously.
Yeah.
But what a career she's had. She won't be performing anytime soon, it sounded like.
Didn't sound like it.
She has so much going for her, and just a great sit down.
Yeah, that was great.
I hope everyone that listened enjoyed it. And like Misty said, it's never too late to go and try out ballet. Jay?
Yep. I'll give it some thought. I can barely touch my toes. So that ship might have sailed for me. But Club 30 members, if you liked what you heard or saw today, we'd love to have you as part of our fam here at Club 30. So hit that thumbs up button, give us a subscribe or a follow, and we'd love to have you. Thanks again.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.